Jonah chapter 1 this morning. So Pastor Jeff is going to go a little late today because it's already 20 after 11 and we're supposed to get out in 10 minutes, right? Well, I know we don't ever get out in. So here's what's going to happen. You are going to say, oh, I'm late. I've got dinner plans. My food is in the oven. My food is in the crock pot. And you're going to speed home down Wolf Road at 70 miles an hour. And there, one of George's good old buddies is going to, woo, woo, woo. And you're going to say, but Pastor Jeff made me late. And he's going to say, I don't care. You broke the law, right? You're guilty. And what can you say to that? The only thing that you can say is, have mercy on me, right? Don't give me what I deserve. Don't give me a ticket. I know I was speeding. I'm guilty. But please have mercy on me. This morning, we look at the mercy of God towards Jonah. Mercy so that Jonah can say at the end of the book, I know, I have experienced, I have lived the grace and the mercy of God. I know that God is slow to anger. I know that He abounds in steadfast love. I know that He relents from judgment. And he can say that because of what happens here in Jonah chapter 1 and in Jonah chapter 2. And this morning we're going to see that Jonah's experience leads him to know God's mercy. Not to know it in an intellectual way, but rather to know it in a very personal, in a very life-saving way. And here in Jonah chapter 1, at the end of Jonah chapter 1 and then into Jonah chapter 2, we find five truths about the Lord's mercy. And these five truths about the Lord's mercy we see towards Jonah. But I want you to know that as we look at these five truths, they're also true of the Lord's mercy for you today. This isn't just something that Jonah is going to experience and we can kind of lift up the Lord and how He worked in Jonah's life. No, this is the way that God's mercy will work in your life, should you let it. Now, I'm just going to be honest with you this morning. I don't think we're going to get to all five, okay? It was already a long sermon. So my goal, just so you know, is to get through the first two this morning. We'll pick it up next week with the last three, okay? So I don't want anybody to have to cry out for mercy to the deputy on their way home. I want to be gracious and merciful to you as well. But I do want to look at these truths about the Lord's mercy. And we're not going to look at these in the way that they're written here, okay? Because if you look at what happens, and then if you would read Jonah chapter 2, Jonah is not giving us a real-time occurrence of what happens to him after he's thrown out of the ship or out of the boat. He's actually reflecting on it, and he's writing about it as a song of praise to the Lord. But for us to see the mercy of God, I think it would be helpful for us if we did look at it in real time. And we kind of saw, okay, what happened to Jonah after he was thrown out of the boat? Well, we know a big fish swallowed him, right? We get that. But what was the progression that led him to have that prayer in the belly of the fish? Because I don't take this as chapter 2 for all of chapter 2 to have happened in the belly of the fish. I think there's some clear indication that much of what happens here in chapter 2 actually happens outside of the fish. And then the fish swallows him. And I'll explain that here in a few minutes. And so I'm going to be jumping around a little bit, not necessarily going chronologically. But what we'll find is God is merciful. God is merciful, and He is merciful past, present, and future. God is not on a mercy timeline because mercy has already been prepared. So what we find here is in verse 15 of chapter 1, they pick up Jonah, they throw him into the sea. And in verse 17, we find that the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah. Jonah, as he is sinking into the deep in verse 3 of chapter 2, says, "For you," he's talking to the Lord, "for you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the sea, into the flood that surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven away from your sight. The waters of verse 5 closed over me to take my wife, to take my life. The deep surrounded me. Weeds wrapped around my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet, when my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord." And Jonah prays to the Lord in verse 1, "I called out to the Lord of my distress, and He answered me out of the belly of Sheol. I cried, and You heard my voice. And my prayer," in verse 7, "comes to God's holy temple," Jonah says. He says, "I will no longer forsake the Lord's steadfast love," in verse 8, "but I will rejoice with a voice of thanksgiving. I will sacrifice, I will vow." Why all of this? Because at the end of the day, the Lord's mercy ensures our salvation. That's Jonah's story here. And as we look at Jonah's story, we see that the story of Jonah is not about Jonah. Who is it about? God, right? It's about God. And last week, we looked at Jonah from the lives of the sailors whom God mercifully redeemed through Jonah's crisis. And we saw that God works all things together for His own good, right? We saw that God's universal desire is for people to be saved. But we also saw, to be saved, you must call upon the name of the Lord. And although in chapter 1, these sailors are just an asterisk to the story of Jonah, they are the highlight of Jonah's God. Because the highlight of Jonah's God, the highlight of the God of the Bible, is that He saves. Only God can take a rebellious prophet in the midst of a storm and draw men unto Himself through it. Now, verse 17 continues this theme of mercy and of grace. And as Jonah is pitched over the sea, he's falling down, down, down. He's in this spiritual, in this downward spiral of running from the Lord, sleeping, falling asleep. He's covering his sin. He's hiding it. He's begrudgingly have to share Yahweh. And he's finally thrown overboard. And before we see Jonah's story in the sea, in chapter 17, which is in the Hebrew Bible is actually verse 1 of chapter 2, we get a glimpse of God's story. And what is God's story for Jonah? God had appointed a great fish. You see, we already get a glimpse of what God is going to do and the mercy that God is going to give. I mean, we have more questions like, okay, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Oh, He swallows him. Right? And typically we go, oh. Right? Like, ew, that's got to be gross. What's the alternative? What's the alternative? Death, right? Death. We find five truths about God's mercy. The first truth that we see here is that God's mercy is already ready. God's mercy is already ready. The book of Jonah shows us this theology that God has already prepared His mercy for people. God has already prepared His mercy for Jonah. He is just waiting to apply it. Jonah is in rebellion when he's thrown overboard. Remember, he essentially says, God, I'm going to take my life. I'll never give it back to you. However, in verse 17, God, in Jonah's rebellion and in Jonah's hatred towards God, has already prepared His mercy. Because clearly the Lord is at work. It's the Lord who appointed. And that word appointed is translated many different ways, from provided to arranged to prepared to sent to made ready and many more. And the reason for this is because it's one of those obscure Hebrew words that's kind of, it's hard to translate. But the term conveys God selected a big fish for Jonah. And context makes it clear that God had selected, He had appointed, He had made a big fish to swallow Jonah. Now, in years past, there was much debate over this big fish, but we now know that God makes big fish to swallow that can swallow people, right? The evidence is clear. And so God has this big fish for Jonah. But Jonah, as he's throwing overboard, isn't shark bait, okay? No. He's God's bait. He's God's bait. Because God had already prepared His mercy for Jonah and this whale. How long does it take for a whale, or I'm saying a whale, but a fish to grow big enough to swallow a person? I don't know. I didn't look it up. But I'm sure it's not just, oh, okay, God could. But that's typically not how God works. Usually God's sovereignty and providence prepare the long way. And so here's God who has sovereignly ordained over His creation, over this big fish, to be born and to grow and to grow, and then to go to the very place where Jonah would be thrown overboard, to be at the very depth that Jonah would be whenever he was swallowed, and to be the right, have the right oxygen in its stomach. All of that has to be put together. You see, the Lord's mercy was already ready for Jonah. He had appointed this fish so that Jonah would not be condemned because of his sin. And His mercy is ready. But do you know that the Lord's mercy is already ready for you too? The Lord's mercy is already ready for you. In Ephesians chapter 2, Paul writes this, "But God being rich in mercy, even when we were dead in our trespasses and sin." When is God rich in mercy? When we are dead in our trespasses and sins. Even when we're dead, God's mercy is there. And it's there to make us alive together with Christ. "For by grace you have been saved," he goes on to say. And we see that Jesus Christ is the Lord's mercy already ready for you. God's mercy through Jesus is awaiting you. Peter emphasizes this truth in his writing because he says that Jesus, the ransom for sin, was foreknown before the foundation of the world. You see, God had planned it, God had prepared it, God had made ready for His mercy to come through Jesus Christ. Jesus is already your mercy. And this is true if you're a Christian and you've been a Christian for 80 years, or if you're not a Christian at all. God's mercy is already ready for you. God has to do nothing for His mercy to come to you. It's already there. God is not moving. God is waiting in His mercy. The psalmist writes this, "Remember your mercy, O Lord, and your steadfast love." That's your chesed, as we talked about this morning. "For they have been from of old." In other words, I look back, and as far back as I can see, I see God's mercy and I see God's covenant love and His covenant affection for His people. The psalmist in Psalm 40 writes this, "You will not restrain your mercy from me." God's not going to hold back the mercy that He's already prepared for you, right? Kind of like, You're having company over, right? And you make a big meal because company's coming over. What are you going to do when company comes over and you sit down to the dinner? You're going to go, here's my spread. Have whatever you want, right? It's already prepared for you. You're not going to be like, oh, you can't have that. I'm saving that for later. I'm saving that for Bill, or I'm saving that for Judy. That's not what you do, right? You it's there. That's the same with God's mercy. It's already there. And God's mercy is there for you. Christian, you may have called upon God's mercy for saving grace, but my question for you this morning is, when's the last time you called upon God's mercy for keeping grace? When's the last time you've said, God, I messed up and I need your mercy? Not that you lose your salvation. No, I believe that Jonah is, quote unquote, saved as much as an Old Testament person can be saved here. He's redeemed here in this instance, but he's rebellious. God's not going to reject or condemn him. But what he needs to do is he needs to accept the mercy that God has already prepared for him. It's already there. And mercy is freely offered to you, friends, and it's awaiting through Jesus Christ. So here's Jonah. He's in the sea. He's sinking deeper and deeper. He's moving closer and closer to God's judgment and to God's condemnation. All the while, this is the picture I get in my mind. Jonah's, you know, he's sinking, and then you've got this big old fish that's kind of circling him, right? Just waiting for the right time when God has ordained this fish to swallow Jonah. And as Jonah is sinking deeper and deeper into the sea, I think Jonah begins to do some reflection on his actions here in chapter 2. And the actions that he reflects here, like in verse 3, where you cast me into the deep and the waves and the billows are passing over me, they're a reflection of him as he is in the sea, not in the belly. And what he comes to realize in verse 4, if you look at verse 4, he says, I am driven away from your sight. What was Jonah's purpose in going to Tarshish? To flee the presence of the Lord, right? What does he recognize there in the sea? He recognizes, I am driven away from your sight. The second truth that Jonah shows us about God's mercy is that God's mercy is for the guilty. God's mercy is for the guilty. You go home and you say, well, Pastor Jeff gave that illustration. Boy, I'm going to go 54 miles an hour. Okay, now you might get run over. But when you get pulled over, you're not going to need mercy for a speeding ticket, are you? Because you haven't broken the law. God's mercy is not for law keepers, but it's for law breakers. And Jonah at this moment realizes that he is a lawbreaker, or at least he recognizes and confesses it, that he is a lawbreaker. It's like the light bulb clicked. You cast me into the sea. All of your waves are over me. I'm sinking deeper and deeper and deeper into this. And Jonah is experiencing the judgment of God, the God of the sea, the creator of the sea. And he realizes that his judgment, he's getting exactly what he wanted, right? Isn't it revolutionary when God gives you a glimpse or a taste of the sin that you're pursuing and you realize how bitter and how horrible and how false that sin is? This is Jonah's experience. But Jonah had to get to the point where he recognized that he was a lawbreaker. He had to get a taste of that sin so that he could recognize that he desperately needed God's mercy. Jonah was guilty, and judgment was his lot. There's a little pun intended there, if you remember from the few from chapter 1. So we find here that seaweeds are wrapping around his head. The depths of the sea are his prison bars. He uses this poetic expression to reveal that he is completely trapped by sin. And what does Paul say in Romans about sin? That it is like a prison. It is chains that bind us. We are slaves to it. And so Jonah can do nothing but realize that he is guilty. Here's the thing, friends. God does not offer mercy to the innocent because the innocent don't need it. What he does is he offers mercy to the guilty. He offers mercy to those who understand that they have transgressed his law. They have been disobedient in their life towards him. They have been rebellious and have fled from him. And what we see here is that as Jonah moves away from God, and Jonah sees that he is away from God, he sees that he is the problem. Can I tell you this morning, if you ever ask yourself, why don't I feel God's presence? The problem isn't God. The problem is you. In fact, when you ask the very question, why isn't God close to me, it reveals a really bad theology. Because the better question is, why aren't I closer to God? Why haven't I moved? Why haven't I pursued? Why haven't I sought him? Because it's not you that moves. Excuse me, it's not God that moves, it's you. And it's you that flees. The Bible says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you. In Hebrews 10 and in James 4, that is relayed that God's mercy is already ready for the guilty, but the guilty have to recognize that they need God's mercy. Because if you're not condemned, if you're not guilty, if you don't need mercy, you're not going to ask for it. However, when you recognize your guilt, you recognize your need for mercy. Friends, you are guilty this morning on some level or another. You are guilty. You need God's mercy. Jesus said, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son that whoever believes in him should not perish but have what? Everlasting life. Yes, but he doesn't end there. He says, God didn't send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to do what? To save the world. God didn't send the fish into Jonah's life to condemn Jonah. Why did he send the fish? To save Jonah. Verse 18 of John 3 goes on to say this, though. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe is condemned already. You see, man is a condemned being. Man desperately needs God's mercy. And to get there, we have to recognize that we are dead in our trespasses and sins. We desperately need God. Friends, God's mercy is already ready for you. He's planned it before he even created the world. He revealed it with Emmanuel, God with us. He accomplished it as Jesus died on the cross, was buried, and rose again. But you need to recognize your need for it. And I'm not talking only about salvation. I'm talking about living a life of righteousness and holiness on a daily basis. This is the gospel lived out every day to say, God, I confess that I am a guilty sinner and that I sinned again. Have mercy on me, not because you're going to condemn me, but have mercy on me and forgive me so that I might not have to taste the vileness of my own sin. We see God's mercy is ready, but you got to be willing to admit your guilt. Have you tasted the mercy of the Lord? Because it's sweet and it's good. I trust and I pray that you are practicing God's mercy on a daily basis, for He loves you even before you loved Him.